Hey everyone, it's Adria.
And I'm Brooke.
And this is What Have You Done? So, how's it going?
Good. How was your Sunday?
It was okay. Sorry, my computer is doing something weird right now. Shit.
Yeah, it's kind of lagging.
Is it better now?
I think so, yeah.
So
how was your Sunday?
Round three. Oh, yeah. Sunday was good. My Sunday was good. Sorry, I got distracted.
It was good. It takes half a second.
Just like errands and stuff. I got to sleep late this week, so that was nice.
Yay.
Yeah. How about you? Did you do anything?
Not really. I was supposed to start packing because I'm going to Myrtle Beach next week for my birthday. Oh, but
that's right.
I filled little travel bottles with shampoo and conditioner, and that's about it. So I still have a lot of packing to do.
Yeah, that's one of the most annoying things about traveling, so.
Yeah, I'm one of the people that waits till the last second and packs everything, but.
I am too.
Whatever.
And then you end up with like 15 pairs of underwear and one pair of pants and.
Yeah, I have a list in my phone already from every trip I've gone on pretty much, so I like have a huge list of everything so I won't forget anything, which actually, it works pretty well, but.
Yeah. I guess so. I don't have. Is the weather supposed to be good down there?
I just asked my cousins who are already down there, and it's like, I think like 60s, 70s. It'll probably be like it is here, honestly.
Yeah. Cool. I don't think I have a lot of stuff to talk about. It looks like we have some new listeners, which is cool.
Yes, another thing I did today was I went and got waxed, but my friend who does my wax listens to our podcast, and she said she loves it. She said that she sometimes like has a hard time getting into podcasts, and her favorites are Morbid and us, so to even be compared is pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Says, I love Morbid.
Yeah, she said she looks forward to our episodes and thinks we do a really good job, so that's awesome.
That's nice.
Shout out to her, because she's the best.
Was it an all-over wax or just your eyebrows?
All over.
All over, Jesus.
Yeah. My skin's a little tender, but it's okay. I got through it.
You get your arms done, too?
No. Just my armpits.
Oh, your pits. Okay.
Not this. No.
The way you point... When you pointed to your arms, I was like, holy, she really did do everything.
Nope. I'm not that intense about it.
I got some feedback from multiple people saying that it was from when I did the sleep paralysis that I failed to mention one of my best sleepwalking stories that I've told people before.
Ooh, okay. Are you going to tell it
then? So I figured I'd throw that in. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I first had the youngest child, it was 2009, so it was a while ago, and I couldn't sleep. Like, I had really bad anxiety when he would sleep, and it was just, like, constantly checking on him. I couldn't get settled, so the doctor gave me a prescription for Ambien, which was intense. Like, usually when I'm sleepwalking, I remember or I wake up, like, during it. This was, like, complete blackout sleepwalking, didn't remember anything. It was
scary.
Yeah, it was, scary. So just to set the mood of the sleepwalking, when the apartment that we lived in that time was like a studio that was converted into like a one-bedroom loft. So he redid the attic. So from the studio, there was like a spiral set of metal stairs going up to the loft. So me in my sleep was able to go down this spiral set of stairs, and I went into the kitchen, and Well, let me start another way. I came into the kitchen one morning. I was cooking. And on the table in the kitchen, there was a Ziploc bag. And it looked like it was full to the top with peanut butter and fluff. Like, just completely full. Like, bulging full. With, like, a corner of a piece of bread sticking out of the top of it. Like, you could barely see the bread. And at that time, my husband's kids weren't living with us full time. So I was like, oh, when the kids must have put this on here when they were last here. And I was like, this place is a mess. There's just everything all around here. And I threw like a little tantrum. And then my husband was like, that wasn't from them. That was you. I was like, how could this be me? He's like, I came down in the morning yesterday and that was on the counter. Like, with a messy, like, knives right next to it, covered in peanut butter. He's like, there was peanut butter all over the place.
How were you not covered in peanut butter and fluff?
I don't know. I have no idea. No recollection. I wish I had taken a picture of the Ziploc baggie, because it was crazy. I was like, I wonder what I was thinking in my head. And then made it back up the stairs.
That's what I'm saying. I think if I tried to put that much peanut butter and that much fluff into a plastic bag, it would not go well. Like, that would take some effort and get everywhere.
Right. I was on a mission.
Oh, that is a good one. That is a really good
one. I just thought of it right now, but when I was still living with my mother, so I was in my teens, I one night drank everything that was liquid inside the fridge. And just left all the empty containers on the kitchen counter. So my mom came down, and I'm talking like pickle juice, like everything. I woke up with the worst stomach ache and having to pee like a racehorse because it was just everything in the fridge.
Oh, just and the pickle juice gets me.
I know. She thought it was my brother. But then he's like, I didn't touch it. And then she noticed that I had a really bad stomach ache. And she was like, what the hell are you thinking? Like, I don't know. But it was just everything.
Oh, I don't even know how you would have fit that much liquid inside of you and not, like, exploded.
Right. And not thrown up or something. Thankfully, damn. I don't think there was that much. It was probably, like, half a jug of milk, a thing of juice.
Still, milk mixed barbecue with salt. Anything. Yeah. Barbecue sauce? Oh, no.
I'm guessing I must have dumped some of it or something, because you're right. I don't know how I could have drank all of that, but my stomach definitely was messed up.
Wow. That's a really good one. I like that one a lot.
Yeah. It's a good thing there wasn't, like, battery acid or something in there.
Oh, gross. Wow. Damn.
A little bit of a palate cleanser before we get into the serious stuff. Now, you don't have a true crime thing this week, right?
Nope. Mine's not intense. It's kind of fun, actually. But it's a surprise because I didn't tell you what I was doing.
I know. I'm excited to hear. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, did you say yours is a bit longer this time?
Yes. And it's kind of a bummer. So. Okay. So maybe if yours is a little more light, we can do that at the end instead of ending on something intense.
Sure, that's fine.
All right. So let's get into it. So what I had covered was the murder of Betsy Faria. And does that name sound familiar to you at all?
I want to say yes, but I have so many names in my head from all the different things I've heard, so it doesn't ring any bells, really.
Right. Right now, it's a little popular because there's a show. I've been watching it on Peacock, but I think you can find it on Hulu. It's called The Thing About Pam, and Renee Zellweger is the main character in it. And at first I didn't like it because they do it in kind of like a jokey, like it's almost like a comedy about this woman dying. But it's like one of those weird comedies where it's kind of like they're acting serious, but it's in a funny, jokey kind of way.
Yeah.
But the series isn't over yet. So for anyone that's watching that, probably don't listen to this, but because it's going to be a spoiler. it's starting to get pretty intense. It's starting to get good. So I actually, this last episode that I just watched, it's the fourth episode in the series. It's getting really good. So I gave it a chance.
So are you covering the whole story? Like, did you do research to figure out the end or?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I watched a Dateline episode on it. I did a lot of internet research too.
Nice.
And I'm pretty sure, I want to say, I haven't listened to them recently, but there is a Dateline podcast called The Thing About Pam about that. That's what the TV show is based off of. And I think I've heard it from Morbid too. They did a podcast on it, but I didn't listen to it for this research just because I didn't want to, you know, like start talking like how they talked on their episode sort of thing.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I don't like to listen to a podcast on anything because I don't want it to sound exactly the same.
So we're going to start off December 27th, 2011. Russ Faria had just come home around 9:40 at night after spending most of the night at his friend's home for a game night. When he walked in, there was no way he could be prepared for what he saw. He opened the door to find his wife, Betsy, on the ground, surrounded by blood, with a knife sticking out of her neck. He immediately called 911, and overcome with emotion and hysterically, he told the operator that his wife had killed herself. So, sounds
so,
like...
Okay, this is ringing a bell now. I think I do recall this one.
Yeah, it's a crazy one. Just to go back a little bit, just to talk about who Betsy was, Elizabeth K. Meyer Faria, Betsy, for short, was born on March 24th, 1969, in Richmond Heights, Missouri, to her parents, Judy and Kenneth Geiger, making her 42 at the time of her death. Betsy and Russ met while she was working at a gas station. Now, she had taken the job at the gas station to be able to devote more time to her DJing business called Party Starters. Russ said that Betsy was the party starter. It didn't matter if she was working or not. If she went to a party or a gathering, she'd be the one getting people dancing or playing games. She was always on the go, Russ continued. I guess that's kind of what drew me to her. She had that kind of style and personality where she never had met a stranger in her life. So it sounds like she was a fun gal.
Yeah, she sounds like she's awesome.
Betsy asked Russ out first, and they went to a local casino together and immediately hit it off. They got married in 2000 and together raised her two daughters from a previous relationship. In 2006, looking for more stability, she started working for a State Farm insurance agency as she had worked for insurance companies in the past. Through that job is where she met her friend Pam Hupp. Betsy and Pam got close as Betsy trained Pam and taught her everything she knew. They did lose touch for a while, but reconnected when Betsy unfortunately received a breast cancer diagnosis in January of 2010. Pam helped out and really filled that best friend role in Betsy's life by taking her to most of her chemo appointments and staying with her when she was sick from her treatments. Pam grew up in a household that didn't have a lot of spare cash, so for a lot of her life, her main focus was making sure to never live like that after she moved out. And she was doing pretty well for herself. She had two children, a husband, and was making a pretty good living flipping houses, but she supplemented that by collecting disability checks for chronic neck and back pain. So she's no longer working at the same insurance agency.
Okay.
Looks like. Now, at first, it seemed like Betsy had beaten her cancer after a few chemo treatments, and she and Russ had planned a celebration of life cruise for November 2011 for friends and family. But sadly, before they could even sail, Betsy learned that not only had her cancer come back, it had spread, and it was terminal.
Ooh, so, that's sad.
I know. Cancer, I know a lot of people deal with it, but I can't imagine like having your hopes up and thinking that everything's okay and then
right after like, going through all that once and then just I don't know to have that hope and be like wow I finally beat it and I'm better to just for it to be like just kidding you have to go through it again and this time it's terminal
right and you must just live your whole life like that even if you don't have terminal cancer just worrying that it's going to come back
for sure
a friend of mine her child was diagnosed with cancer when he was 10 months old and he's 12 now or he might be 11 now, and she still thinks about it.
Oh, I'm like, sure. It's still especially your kid.
Yeah. So, Betsy relied on her positive attitude to get her through and ended up still going on the cruise. On days when she wasn't feeling too bad from the chemo, she made sure to be out with her family or enjoying tennis, which was one of her favorite hobbies. She didn't want to be sad, Russ said. She knew she had a lot of sad days ahead of her. It was going to make every day as happy as she could for herself and others. That's what she did throughout her life and what she would do up until the end. So this is where it starts to get rough. So as I said, December 27th, 2011, so a month after their cruise, Russ had planned to go to a regular game night that evening and texted Betsy around noon that he would pick her up for her mom's, where she was staying after her latest chemo treatment. That night, okay. Betsy later texted Russ that Pam had offered to drive her home and said she was tired and just wanted to get home earlier. Pam stated that she dropped Betsy off around 7 o'clock that night. Betsy and Pam both called Russ from Betsy's phone and left a message that she was home and would see him later. Pam stayed in her car and left after Betsy made it inside.
At so Pam never went inside?
No. She said she never went inside.
Okay. She said, keyword. Gotcha.
Yeah. She said her story changes a lot, but initially she said that she did not go inside the house.
Okay.
At 7:21, one of Betsy's daughters had called her mom, but it went to voicemail and she figured her mom had already gone to sleep. Russ left his friend's house around 9. He made a stop at an Arby's for a snack and headed home, getting there around 9:40 to find Betsy on their living room floor. Now, he initially told 911 that his wife had completed suicide, but upon examination, Betsy had been stabbed more than 55 times. Her wrists had been cut down to the bone, and a serrated kitchen knife was sticking out of her neck.
Oh my God. That's,
It was brutal.
Some anger.
Yeah. So, I heard something interesting the other day. I can't remember where I heard it, or else I would credit it, but someone had said that sometimes when there's those really intense killings, that sometimes it could be, a lot of it is attributed to that it's just really hard to kill someone, you know? Like, yeah. I think it was a detective. I think it was, what's his name? Paul Holes from the Golden State Killer case. This might have been on Morbid, but he had said that sometimes they don't rule out crime of passion or think it is because depending on where they're stabbing the person, it's not as quick as what you see on TV. Like, yeah. It takes a lot.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about, because they kind of say, like, especially when it's somebody who's inexperienced, they don't realize till they're doing it how difficult it is.
Right, exactly. First responders had concluded that Betsy had been dead for over an hour, likely longer. Her time of death was later reported to be between 7:20 p.m. and 9:40 that evening. Unfortunately for Russ, his initial claim that Betsy had completed suicide was considered ludicrous by first responders that had seen her body and saw no way that this could be anything other than a brutal slaying.
Do we know why he thought suicide?
I think because he just saw the knife in her neck and assumed that. I really think he just went into shock.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense.
Which, yeah. Like, who knows what your first reaction would be. I don't know if that would be my first reaction, but he was criticized a lot for his 911 call, which is really sad because he was obviously really disturbed by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he got picked apart.
Yeah. Oh, that's the next line. Couple that with Russ's volatile state and the fact that he had horrifically failed a polygraph test made him the prime suspect in this case. When interviewed the next day, Betsy's bestie Pam claimed that Russ had a violent temper, was a heavy drinker, and threatened Betsy when she wanted to leave him. Pam also pointed police in the direction of Betsy's laptop, where they found a document where the writer expressed fears that her husband would kill her. Russ was arrested that day, and on January 4th, 2012, 4 days after Betsy's funeral, Russ was charged with first-degree murder and armed criminal action. Wow. Unable to pay the $250,000 bail, he was held until his trial began in November 18th, 2013. So almost 2 years after the initial crime.
Wow.
All right. Now, you may be asking, if Betsy's time of death was between 7:20 and 9:40, and Russ got home at 9:40, how would he have time to enact this murder and clean everything up before his 911 call?
Right.
Well, during Russ's trial, defense attorney Joel Schwartz argued that testimonies of the four friends he visited, cell phone records showing at his friend's home 20 miles away from the scene, and receipts from Arby's and one other stop that he made would show that he did not have time to commit the murder. There was also no traces of blood on his body or clothes or anywhere in the house, showing that he would have needed ample time to clean up afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Prosecuting attorney Leah Askey countered that by suggesting that Russ's friends were providing false alibis and conspired with him to commit the murder by holding onto his cell phone and posing as him to buy food at Arby's while he committed the crime. She also alleged that Russ committed the slaying while he was naked, so there would be less of a cleanup.
Huh.
If that's true, it sounds insane. Like, who?
Well, right. Who kills him? Right, exactly. They're trying to pull at any little thing they can.
Right. And you can see from the get-go, the sheriff's office just wanted to prosecute Russ. That was their main focus this whole time. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing that you did not get to hear during the trial is that cell phone records show Pam in the vicinity of the Faria home for up to 30 minutes after she claimed to drop Betsy off. Or that just 3 days before Betsy's death, Betsy's life insurance policy was changed to make sure that Pam was the sole beneficiary. And that payout was $150,000.
I don't understand why people do that. And they don't expect that that's not going to be seen.
Right. And 3 days before.
That's right. Like, that's so close. Come on.
Like, not saying I'm going to do it. But if I was going to kill my husband for a life insurance policy and I wanted to up the thing, I'd be waiting 2 years at least. Before I did anything.
Right. Like,
that would be a slow burn.
Count down the days.
Right. So the judge in this case had ruled that any information on Pam Hupp wasn't going to be shown to the jurors. So in a secret hearing during the trial where the jurors were excused, Pam had alleged that she had put $100,000 of the payout into a trust for Betsy's daughters. But in 2014, a civil suit against her that was filed by the daughters, she had admitted that she had taken the money out of the trust for herself. So any information that Pam gave as to the money or where she was after she dropped Betsy off was not admissible in court. So that really did Russ a disservice because the jurors couldn't hear any of it.
That's stupid.
So on November 21st, 2013, with no physical evidence provided, Rusk was convicted on both counts and a month later sentenced to life plus 30 years in prison without the possibility of parole. Initial motions for a retrial were denied until the media got involved. Fox 2 KTVI partnered with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch in February 2014. The newspaper reported that Pam kept the $150,000 rather than put it in a trust for Faria's daughters. She also contradicted herself during police interviews, such as initially claiming that she had not entered the house, but changed the story twice. The 911 operator that took Russ's call believed him to be genuinely hysterical, given the circumstances of what he was witnessing. Mm-hmm. The article also alleged that the lead prosecutor, Leah Askey, was in a relationship with Officer Mike Lang, who was the captain of the sheriff's department, as well as a key witness for the prosecution during the trial. So, big conflict of interest there.
Yeah.
In February of 2015, the Missouri Court of Appeals granted a retrial with a new judge for Russ Faria. And mostly due to the pressure from the media and people reading that newspaper article.
Mm-hmm.
During this trial, Schwartz was able to introduce new evidence implicating that Hupp was a possible perpetrator. a new witness, a CSI agent who had inspected the crime scene, testified that the slippers found in Russ's closet had not gotten bloody by stepping in blood. Rather, they looked like they were dipped in it. There were no bloody footprints or any signs of blood after luminol testing. And initially, the luminol photos of the crime scene were withheld from the first trial. Not sure why, but those weren't available. And in those photos, it showed no cleanup was done. For there, all the photos of the sink everywhere, the bathroom everywhere in the house was clean. And for those of you that don't know, luminol is a solvent that when it's sprayed on a surface that had traces of blood on it, when you take a picture of it, it lights up kind of like a black light on screen. So if there was blood there and someone tried to clean it with bleach or whatever, it would show up on those pictures. So it was important that they were able to show that, because he couldn't have had time to clean anything. If he did, it would have been a rush job.
Right.
During this second trial, it was disclosed that Pam had changed her story yet again, claiming that she and Betsy were actually in a sexual relationship that Russ was furious about. She also remembered that she had seen Russ in a car outside the house with another man while dropping Betsy off that night of the crime. Phone records prove this to be untrue. On November 7th, 2015, 4 years after his wife's murder, Faria's conviction was overturned and he was released from jail after serving a little less than 4 years for a crime that he didn't commit.
Wow.
Leah Askey maintains that Pam was never pursued for the murder of Betsy because she believed that Pam would be physically unable to commit the murder due to her disabilities. That's good that he was cleared.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Side note, Russ won a lawsuit against Lincoln County for his wrongful conviction and received a payout of $2 million.
Wow. I mean, good for him.
So that's good. Hopefully that makes up for 4 years in jail.
Yeah. That's rough. I don't know.
So this is where Pam Hupp starts going bananas. Shortly after noon on August 6, 2016. So this would be about 6 or 7 months after Russ was acquitted. Pam went to the O'Fallon Police Department. Can you guess why?
Because she remembered something else.
What?
I said because she remembered something else.
No. Well, she claimed that she was sitting in her SUV in her garage when a man, later identified as Louis Gumpenberger, jumped out of a car driven by another person and demanded she drive to the bank to retrieve Russ's money. Then she claimed that she knocked the knife out of his hands and fled into her house, where she shot him with her Ruger LCR handgun that she kept on her nightstand when he followed her in.
Okay, wait. Does this guy exist?
Yes. It's a real guy.
Did she really kill him?
Yep.
What?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I feel like I need to hear more to understand.
Yeah. So the St. Charles prosecutor. So now that this police force knows that she's most likely full of shit, I think they're starting to look into what she's doing a little more, because they're like, okay, Pam.
You know? Right.
So when they looked into it, I must have missed it. Let me go to my handwritten notes here. So when they went back to the crime scene, where is it? Oh, upon crime scene investigation on the body of Louis Gumpenberger, there was $900 in cash and a note that stated, kidnap Hupp, get Russ's money from Hupp, kill Hupp. So it was a note to himself about what he was supposed to do.
Because he couldn't remember that.
Yes. So a couple years before this happened, he was in a really bad car accident that did cause some brain damage. So he was considered handicapped from that. So he did have a big problem remembering stuff.
Okay, so that note was legit? That was him?
Yes, that note was legit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the St. Louis, and then it also said collect $10,000 at a later date. So he was getting paid $10,000 for this in person, apparently. The St. Charles County prosecuting attorney and the O'Fallon chief of police theorized that Hupp had lured Gumpenberger to her home by presenting herself as Kathy, a producer for the television program Dateline NBC, and offering to pay him to reenact a 911 call. Then she shot him in order to implicate Russ Faria in an attempt on her life and take the heat off her, quote-unquote, planting the knife, the note, and the money on his body. So they're claiming that she did write the note, actually. Gumpenberger was believed to have been selected at random. Several pieces of evidence were identified. Cell phone records show that Hupp had been in Gumpenberger's neighborhood less than 1 hour before the shooting, contradicting her claim that she had never met him before. The cell phone records also showed that they were both together for some of those times. Their cell phones pinged off of the same towers an hour before. On okay. August 10th, 2016, a police report had been filed with St. Charles County stating that a woman matching Hupp's description had approached O'Fallon resident Carol Alford, also known as Carol McAfee, posing as a Dateline NBC producer and offering her $1,000 to reenact a 911 call. Security camera footage showed that the woman in question had been driving Hupp's car, which is weird. A second witness, Brent Charlton, informed the police that Hupp had approached him with a separate proposition. So she approached two other people before she got someone to agree to help her out with that.
She's getting way too many people involved with this.
She's
stop asking people.
Police investigators found the $100 bills in Gumpenberger's pocket. A tenth found on Hump's dresser had a sequential serial number to four of the nine bills. So the chances of that were in the one in 1 millions that she would have a sequential bill from that guy.
So it was all her money.
Yes.
Okay.
Which they're theorizing that she planted on him to make it look like he had gotten some money up front to do this deed. So right. She planned out the whole thing. Investigators had suggested that the knife had been purchased at the Dollar Tree in O'Fallon alongside several other items found in Hupp's house. The paper on which the note found on Gumpenberger's body had been written. The note on Gumpenberger's body had been written. That was written was also thought to have been bought by Hupp. The knife found in Hupp's car was found wedged between the passenger seat and the central console. Knives in Hupp's kitchen were similarly stored, wedged between the stove and the counter, which is weird. A carpet swatch found by police appeared to have been positioned to protect a rug in Hupp's home from Gumpenberger's blood. So blood from him was found in another area that she didn't claim to have killed. She claimed to have killed him in the bedroom, and they found swatches of his blood in the living room and leading up there.
Okay.
Police investigators were skeptical that Gumpenberger's severe physical and mental impairments following his accident would have allowed him to carry out the acts that Hupp said he had.
They said he wouldn't be able to?
Yeah, they said that he was so mentally disabled that they don't think he would have been able to try and overpower her or carry out anything that she said happened.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
On August 23rd, 2016, Hupp was arrested and charged with first-degree murder and armed criminal action. So the same exact things that Russ were. But this was against Louis Gumpenberger. Upon being arrested, she asked to visit a bathroom where she used a ballpoint pen to stab her neck and wrist in an apparent suicide attempt. St. Charles County Assistant Prosecutor described the act as a consciousness of guilt, and her bail was set at $2 million. On December 16th, a grand jury indicted Hupp on the charges. Hupp appeared in court January 31st, 2017, pleading not guilty. In March 2017, prosecutors stated they would seek the death penalty due to apparently arbitrary choice of Gumpenberger as the victim. Instead of contesting the charges at trial, Hupp entered an Alford guilty plea, waiving her right to a jury trial. Do you know what an Alford plea is?
I don't think so.
I had to look it up. I've definitely heard it before, but I couldn't remember
Me too.
What it was. But it's basically saying that she's saying she's not guilty, but she understands that the evidence that will be presented in trial will show her to be guilty.
Okay.
The whole point of that is that if she is involved in some sort of civil suit after the trial, nothing that she says in court can be held against her because she's not admitting guilt, sort of thing. So she can't be sued for anything that she says. Also, I think it's a way of avoiding a death penalty sentence.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the next line. As a condition of her plea agreement, Hupp did not face the death penalty. She was sentenced to life without parole in 2019. She is serving her sentence at the Chickalody Correctional Center. In a phone call to her husband, Hupp claimed that she had pled guilty so her family would not have to witness an ugly trial. In October 2019, Gumpenberger's mother, Margaret Birch, filed a wrongful death lawsuit, fraud, and misrepresentation against the incarcerated Hupp. In 2020, she was awarded a judgment of $3 million. Birch's attorney, Gary Berger, subsequently filed to garnish Hupp's prison trust account, into which her $1,200 COVID CARES Act relief stimulus was paid. So they took her stimmy. They took her stimulus as of February 2022. The family had not received any money from her, which isn't a big surprise. Wow. And that money did end up going to Faria's daughters, the whole amount. So good. that was good. In September of 2020, Hupp's husband Mark filed for divorce, describing their marriage as irretrievably broken.
This lady had a husband.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yep. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And he stood by her for mostly all of it. Even after hearing the testimonies in trial, he was convinced that she had nothing to do with it.
Wow.
In September 2020, Hupp filed a motion to vacate her conviction, claiming she was pressured to take a plea. But it was denied the following March, as citing that it was untimely. So pretty much she waited too long to file that. So yeah, that's pretty much it. There's one more weird thing about her that, so she never, let me go back to this. She was charged with the murder of Betsy Faria, but it ended up being dismissed because of mishandling of evidence in that trial. But they say they're pretty much, she didn't get any extra sentencing for it. She technically has not gone on trial for that. She entered a not guilty plea in 2021. She had the charge of armed criminal action dismissed, but a preliminary hearing was scheduled for February 2022, so just a couple months ago, but it was delayed indefinitely after Hupp's public defender died of a heart attack.
Oh.
Now, also, her mother died under suspicious circumstances, too.
That's so her mother weird.
Just happened to fall out of her third floor apartment in the independent senior living community that she lived in after being dropped off by Pam that night.
Hmm.
An autopsy found that she had 0.84 milligrams of the sedative Zolpidem in her body, over 8 times the expected concentration for someone having taken the normal dose.
Oh.
Due to her physical, the death was changed from accidental to undetermined after more looking into it, but Pam was never convicted of anything, saying that her mom was pretty unstable to begin with, so it was very believable that she could have fallen out. No one saw Pam leaving, so there's no way to really determine when she left or if she was there when her mom fell out of the patio.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So that's how long was her sentence? How long is she supposed to be in jail for as of right now?
She is in jail for life.
Oh, okay. Good. I mean, that sucks. Yeah. That, like, you obviously want, like, the justice for Betsy, but at least it's not like she's going to get out, so.
Yeah, no, she's sentenced to life without parole, so she has no chance of getting out, and the only thing she did avoid was the death penalty with the Alford plea there.
Gotcha. That was really good. You did a really good job.
Oh, thanks.
I followed that really well, so.
Good. I'm happy about that. I was having a really hard time putting that down on paper.
It definitely is a process learning how to research and put it down to have it make sense. And I feel like, I don't know if it happens to you, but when I've been doing my research, like, it almost gives information, but, like, not in order. So I have to, like...
Yes.
Like, you have to go back and, like, find where you wrote this big section on something else. And it definitely can get confusing. Mm-hmm. And is a lot of going back and forth to make sure you have stuff in the right order, but...
Yeah. No, it is hard, but... This one was fun. I like the stories about the crazy bitches, you know? Like, yeah. You like the unsolved cases.
Yep.
I like people that are just crazy, like, what?
Right.
And this show that I was talking about before, the thing about Pam, Renee Zellweger does a really good job of playing, like, a weird, crazy lady, you know? So it's pretty interesting. I would watch that.
Yeah, that definitely would be something I would watch.
Yeah, because it's interesting because it's not just another Dateline. It comes from Dateline, though. You know, the guy that voices over a lot of them, Keith Morrison. He has the really
soothing, I think so.
Soothing kind of voice. Yeah, he narrates that show, too. So it's pretty funny.
Huh.
Because he has that quirky voice that it's like, and who would have thought Pam would be the one with the, you know?
Yeah.
I loved it.
Nice. Yep,
so that's all I have on them.
That was hopefully a good one.
In the show, it shows that her daughters, for a long time, even after Russ was acquitted, that they had a hard time believing that he didn't do it. So I think that after things came out about Pam, that it made it a lot better, and they have a lot better of a relationship now.
That's good.
Yeah. I can't imagine having your wife murdered and then going to jail and, like, having to deal with all that at the same time. It's going to be a lot mentally.
Oh, yeah. Right. I can't even imagine.
So, what have you got today?
Alrighty, you ready?
I'm ready.
So, I did... This is a little fun one. I did the Avril Lavigne conspiracy theory.
Avril Lavigne?
Have you heard of the...
I didn't know she... No!
You've never heard that?
No, is it that she doesn't really have Lyme disease? No. Oh, wait, no. I do know. That just brought it into my brain. The voice thing on my thing just went really high. I'm like yelling. No, I remember. It's okay, I'll let you talk. Because this one, that's funny if it's what I'm thinking it is.
All right. So Can I say it? Can you say it? Yeah, if you want.
It's a conspiracy that Avril Lavigne is not really Avril Lavigne, right? She has someone playing her.
Yeah, and she died forever ago.
Okay.
So this one's just fun. I don't believe it at all. I'm not trying to spread stupid stuff, but it's interesting, and I'm just like, why is this even a thing?
Yeah, I've never looked into it, so I don't know why people say that. But I've even said to you, now that she's come out with the new album, I'm like, why does she look the same as when I was in high school singing Skater Boy?
Yeah. Okay. So to start off, I just have like a little bit of background information on her. She was born in Ontario, Canada in 1984. She came from a very religious family. Her talent was discovered early on, around the age of 2. She did a little bit of acting, too, when she was young. She was originally a country singer and was a fan of Shania Twain, huh. Garth Brooks, the Dixie Chicks. And that's wild. I had no idea about that. And you wouldn't think that.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
No.
So a lot of the focus on this conspiracy theory is how different she looked when she was younger and how she looks now after getting the fame that she has. But let's not forget that that happens to so many people. Like, she's, I don't even know how old she is now, but she's, like, almost 40. I'm gonna look a lot different when I'm almost 40 compared to when I'm 18.
First of all, I was born in 1984, so I resent the almost 40 comment.
Sorry.
She's 37 years old, depending on when her birthday is. Do you know when her birthday is?
I think it's September.
Okay, yeah, so she's 37. Okay.
anyway. So I watched, I got a lot of this information from a YouTube video called Truth About the Avril Lavigne Conspiracy Theory by Kendall Ray. And she posted a couple, some good pictures too that she found. And she posted photos of like young Avril Lavigne's school photos, and they look so much like mine at that age, which is really funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll have to, I know I took a picture of it, but I'll have to show you. Oh my god, it's kind of, it's pretty funny.
I think I can kind of picture that in my head, you looking similar to
her. I'm sending it to you right now. All right. Yeah, so I just sent you that.
Is one of these you?
No.
Oh, the middle one looks just like you, like with the when you wore glasses.
Yeah, the middle one definitely, that's the one that looks the most like a school picture that I have, which you obviously can't compare.
Yeah, she looks a lot different.
Right, but like, okay, yes. I look a lot different than my picture, you know, but that looked like from, that, so.
So this is grade 9, grade 10, grade 11. She looks completely different in all three of these pictures. Like, I wouldn't think grade 9 was grade 10.
She does.
Like, they look like two different people, like she thinned out and had a growth spurt sort of thing.
Yeah, it definitely, yeah. It all looks really different. She does,
you should put a comparison on Instagram, because that does look a lot like you, actually.
I would have to, I'm sure my mom has like old school pictures of me of one that looks exactly like that, because I can picture it. oh, goodness. All right, I'll have to post that picture too so people can see it, because that's a good one.
I also just Googled her, so I have pictures pulled up of Avril and not Avril sort of thing too, so I can look at the comparisons while you're talking.
Okay. So she got signed to L.A. Reid when she was just 17. The music industry is what seemed to push her and mold her to that punk rock type sound mm-hmm. that she had. Because originally that's not what she was going for. Huh. So in that video that Kendall uploaded, she said that when she was trying to search for younger pictures of Avril Lavigne, that it was almost impossible to find. It seemed like Avril's life before fame was just forgotten about. Whether or not mm-hmm. that was intentional. So, kind of getting more into the theory. So, the rumors are that she didn't like the fame and was getting burnt out by it, which happens to a lot of celebrities. I think there are a few interviews of her even saying that. She didn't want to deal with meet and greets and paparazzi, which, another side note, I met her back in 2014 at a meet and greet where she was opening for a Backstreet Boys concert. So, clearly she doesn't mind doing meet and greets too much, because she was super nice. It was very quick, but she was super nice. Like, you wouldn't sign up to do that. 2014. Oh, okay. okay. So she wanted to focus mainly on her music. So she allegedly hired a woman named Melissa Vandella to kind of be the face of the fame, is what it seemed. A lot of people seem to think this is fact, because there's no, a lot of,
what is the name again? Melissa?
Melissa Vandella. A lot of people seem to think that this is fact, but there's no proof that this Melissa person even exists.
Oh, yeah.
So all of this started from a Brazilian blog in 2011, and the blog was called Avril is Dead.
A little dramatic.
So I know that's where it started, but I don't know why. I don't know why Brazil, like, and I know with the different theories of, like, a lookalike, the word clone was thrown around quite a few times, which is interesting.
That is so funny.
So, isn't it weird? It's just, like, why?
Yeah, well, because people on the internet start thing about anybody. Like, obviously, it got caught.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Up, so, they accomplished.
Yeah, and I watched a video.
Oh, go ahead. I was done. I just trailed off.
No. I watched a video of she was being interviewed in Brazil, and like the people interviewing her said something about it, like said something about the theory, and she literally was just like, oh, well, that's weird. She's like, I'm right here, so...
Right.
Like, she literally was like, what the fuck?
She strikes me as someone that's, like, kind of awkward in interviews sort of thing. Like, I could picture her, like, with a tight smile being like...
Yeah. That's exactly what was happening. Okay, so this theory gained a lot of attention in 2015 to 2017, when a lot of various people started spreading this conspiracy around the internet. So what led some of these people to believe this theory is that I guess there's a photo out there with Avril with the name Melissa written on the outside of her hand. I don't know if that's maybe one of the pictures you saw. There's no explanation, though, of, like, why this was a thing. Or, like, I mean, right. I'm sure you can Photoshop anything, so who knows if that's even a real picture. But people write things on themselves all the time. Like, maybe, I don't know, maybe, like, a friend of hers was, like, sick and she's, like, you know, wrote her name on her hand. I don't know.
Exactly.
Like,
or she's trying to remember something.
Like, supporting her. Yeah. So, in Kendall's video, she brought up a good point, saying where a lot of people will write somebody's name on their hand in support of them and post it on social media, which I think makes sense and doesn't necessarily mean, like, that would, you know, doesn't mean anything huge or that... That's the person
you would think that Avril would address
replaced your life with.
Or I wonder if she thinks it's so ridiculous that she's not even giving it.
I think that's more of what it is. I think, because it's like, I have heard this before, but it's usually something, you know, people know I love her. So they'll be like, oh my God, have you heard this? And I'm like, yes, I've heard this theory. So I don't think it's really that big of a thing, but who knows? Okay. So, according to the theory, it said that when she begun writing her follow-up album to Let Go, which was a great album and one of my favorites, and that album did incredibly well, there was a lot of pressure for her to come up with something even better. Mm-hmm. It was said that around this time, her grandfather died as well. It apparently affected her so much that she would be crying on stage and just overall devastated about this loss. It was said she was so emotionally devastated and depressed that she then took her own life. However... there is no source or proof of that actually having happened. It all came from that Brazilian blog post. So after that allegedly happened, her producers wanted to continue the Avril Lavigne name, so they let Melissa do it. Apparently that they were friends and spent a lot of time together, so Melissa picked up a lot of Avril's traits pretty easy. So here's where the change in her style of her music comes in, and her look. Her songs... Complicated and Skater Boy, which are her probably like most well-known songs from when she was, you know, real young, are unbelievably different from some of her newer music, like her Hello Kitty song, which I don't know if you've ever heard that song.
Full disclosure, I haven't listened to a lot of
it's a pretty wild one
since probably that album with Complicated and stuff. I've listened to a couple of her new songs that seem pretty good. They seem punky.
Yeah, her new album that just came out, I love. Yeah, so that song is like times 10 turnaround from that music, which, again, whatever. People change. And that's, you're right. And that's also where her look changed. Mostly like the bleach blonde hair and her style changed a bit. But it honestly didn't change too much. Like, I literally, like, last year had black hair and now it's blonde and I'm still the same person, so.
Right. And styles change too, like that heavy black eyeliner that she used to wear. I'm sure her eyes looked set a lot different with the makeup that she used to wear, and now it's a little more, so I've definitely seen pictures of her now and it's a lot more like fresh face, not a ton of makeup sort of look. So, I mean, even that will make someone's face look different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely, for sure. So this change also happened in the period of time when she wasn't really doing music, and when she came back, it was drastically different. Some of the words in her songs were also supposedly about her leaving. I know there was one specific song, I didn't write it down, but, like, again, people will pick apart absolutely anything and try to find meaning in anything, so that's kind of what was happening with that. And that's pretty much my next line, is that people went down a rabbit hole trying to see anything they could. So this Kendall that made the video that I watched also made another good point, saying that if they really pushed that punk rock on her, that, like, maybe that wasn't even her. Maybe as she got older, she was finally able to express more of the style she wanted. Which, that I think that makes a lot of sense.
Right. Yeah. That happens with a lot of musical artists, I think. I'm trying to, people like Taylor Swift, Lady Gaga, like, once they got popular, they started writing their own music and they started writing what they liked. And I think a lot of people will either enjoy that and stay with them or go off and say they changed, but it's really, they're able to do that now. They have that freedom because they got that popularity.
Yeah, for sure. So people would also compare photos of her when she was younger and now, saying things like her birthmarks look different now, freckles are in different spots, just things that seem very nitpicky. Plus, like, people get new freckles all the time. You go out in the sun, you get different freckles. Like, people, again, and people can Photoshop absolutely anything. Like, there's no way to know.
And she's wealthy, so who knows? She might have gotten some work done if people are saying that she has different facial structure. I'm not sure if that's what people are claiming, but I can see, like, if she got her teeth straightened or something like that, it would make people look different.
I think that was, right, exactly. So in 2014-15, Avril announced that she had Lyme disease, so that made her really, really sick for a while. So that's a good reason that to take some time off. Like, I watched an interview that she did talking about it, and she said she was, like, it was bedridden, like, she got super emotional, and she said it was just one of the worst times in her life, which I can't even imagine having to deal with that. And she also got divorced in 2015 from the lead singer of Nickelback. So that's another thing to kind of bring you down. So those are a few of the reasons as to why she disappeared for a while and came back looking different and having a different style. And that's, honestly, that's pretty much all I could find on the theory. It's a pretty basic idea of what happened.
Right.
But there's nothing to back it up. There's no proof of anything. It's just the internet just spiraled when one blog put it out there. But it's just entertaining, I don't know, and silly. And
So you don't think there's anything to it, right? You said?
Oh, no.
I wonder if that bothers her in a way, you know, if people being like, you couldn't possibly be Avril Lavigne anymore. Like, you don't look
anymore. Yeah, I don't know. Again, people are crazy, so I would like to say that, like, most of her fans wouldn't say that, but at the same time, people would be so crazy that they would, like, would go after her and be like, you're not real, you know?
Oh, man. That is nuts. I think I had heard that I've heard that in passing before, but I guess I never really knew where that came from.
Mm-hmm. I knew of the theory, but I didn't really know where it came from or...
Imagine if it was real, though. The
specifics, so...
Yeah,
that'd be wild. But also, like, how would you find somebody that is also talented that looks just like you? Like, that's pretty far stretch, but...
Looking at the comparison photos on Google, I don't see any sort of difference in it. Like, just little differences, but like you said, when people grow and get older, like, everything, I don't know. These comparison photos all look the same to me, except maybe she got a little work done on her nose. Maybe, I don't know, but that could be losing weight too.
Yeah, for sure.
What was the album that you said you liked?
The new one?
I'm gonna look it up. I don't know. You said that's one of my favorite albums.
The Let Go was her first album, and that had, like, Complicated in it and stuff.
Maybe I'm thinking of something else then.
The new one's good.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up. Now I want to listen to some old school Avril Lavigne. I heard they're making a movie out of Skater Boy, right?
I've heard that too. Yeah. And people also say that to me. Somebody said that to me, like, yesterday.
Now that I think about it, I could see you looking like Avril Lavigne.
Yeah, I've definitely gotten that before. I know, I'm upset that when I met her, I didn't have blonde hair, because I would have looked so much like her if the picture was taken now versus back when I had darker hair.
Sorry, you cut out a little bit.
I said it would have been cool to take that picture now, when I had met her because I look, because the blonde hair and stuff, like, I look a lot more like her now than I did when I got the picture taken with her. So that would have been cool, but.
When I was in high school, she definitely inspired, like, I was wearing, like, tank tops with big baggy JNCO jeans and would wear a tie and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
Like, I loved her style back then.
I couldn't even tell you how many times I've been her for Halloween.
Oh, yep, I bet. That's an easy costume, too.
Right, exactly. Straighten my hair and put on baggy pants and a tie.
Cool, that was fun.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was a little mix-up, a little bit different from our last episodes.
I like ending on a nice note like that.
Right, I like ending on in a better mood.
Yeah. When you said you were doing a conspiracy theory, I 100% thought that you were going to be doing... Isn't there a conspiracy theory about Christina Grimmie, if she, like, didn't really die or something like that?
Is there?
I think so. I don't know.
I think I've heard that, but again, people say everything and anything, so I think I heard that because she, like...
There's so many witnesses to that.
Oh, God, yeah. Her brother tackled the goddamn guy, like... But I think I have heard that, that she... Same kind of thing, like, she wanted to disappear, so... All right. Do you know what you're doing for next week? Or the next week?
No.
Or the 2 weeks? Whenever we... Probably 2 weeks before the next one, since I'll be gone next week, but...
Yeah. You're going to be gone. So I'll have some time to think. Maybe I'll... It might be another true crimey thing, because I've been thinking of a couple different things, but we'll probably have someone on, right, in a couple weeks talking about...
Yeah, that's true. I know. I keep forgetting about that, but yes, that'll definitely happen. Couple people that'll hopefully be writing in stories. I've heard that they've been typing up stuff to send to us, so that'll be cool to start up that part of it, too.
Yeah, that'll be cool to tell other people's stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was fun researching this one, so.
It is fun. I like sitting down, and again, it's a lot of work, but I like diving into a story, because I'm doing, my next one will be another missing persons, which is my thing, but... I like thinking about where the fuck did they go? Who knows? I don't know.
I like those too, the head scratchers, like thinking of, just like you said, like where are they?
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing?
Yep.
And if they're gone, why hasn't anyone said anything, you know?
Yeah. I think two different people told me that they had never even heard of the Maura Murray case, and that's right in New Hampshire where I live.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm like, that's cool. This one, the next one I'm doing is in Maine, so still pretty close.
Cool. Nice. Thank you, everyone, again for listening and taking your time out to support us. It's been nice seeing support on social media, too.
It really has been.
Yeah. It was a lot more motivating, too, seeing mm-hmm. that people are listening to everything and had good feedback, so.
For sure, yeah.
Much appreciated.
Yes.
Yep. You can find us on Instagram on @whathaveyoudonepod.
And you can send in your stories to whathaveyoudonepod@gmail.com.
Send it on in. And I guess that's it for... Oh, yeah.
Make sure
to like and subscribe.
We're really good at this.
Sorry.
Yeah, like, subscribe so we don't have to keep saying it, because clearly we can't do that.
Yeah, leave us a review, even if it's bad, because at this point, any feedback is fine, but hopefully it's good.
I can't wait till we get that first bad review.
I can't either, because I say I can take it, but I really can't, so hopefully it's not that bad.
It will hurt my feelings, but then I'll be like, well, you're stupid.
Right, exactly. You know what you're talking about.
Right.
All right. God. Well, I guess that's it until next time.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.